Let's get this over with.
Thunder Force. Why are we talking about Thunder Force?
Because AC/DC? I don't know. It's another excuse to put that AC/DC song in a movie.
Well, you know, Van Halen kicks ass. I learned that watching this movie.
And okay. And it made me want to go down in the basement and break out my Lita Ford t-shirt, which I don't have.
I don't know what happened. I thought I'd learned my lesson from super intelligence, but I didn't. You messaged me something yesterday, and I'm going to assume that you were talking about the movie we're about to talk about now, saying it's your first zero star film of the year.
Here's the thing. I'd wound up not giving it zero stars just because I think that there is an interesting premise here. It's never played out in a satisfying way. In fact, it's just a bloody mess. It's awful. Yeah. But I like, before we get to the adult versions of these characters, I like what was going on with the younger characters and the potential there. So, and I thought that the young actors were good. Even we eventually, even when we're hanging out with the adult co-stars, there's a teenage supporting character who I thought was great.
She was the best thing about this movie.
Yeah. And so, although what they did with her was quite predictable, but really.
And nonsensical, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. Should have just been called Nonsense the Movie. It's a mess.
Well, so we should probably start by, first of all, saying what this movie is about. It debuted on Netflix on Friday. This will be coming out the following Monday. It's Melissa McCarthy and Ben Falcone, husband and wife teaming up again to inflict their awful brand of humor onto unsuspecting audiences. This time they're tackling the comic book genre. I don't think this is based on an existing property. It's kind of like Joel Schumacher-esque in that the filmmakers seem to have an idea of what comic books are like based on their limited understanding of pop culture. But most comic books are way smarter than this. So in 1983, there was some kind of a space event that rained down these
cosmic rays.
Yeah. Filled with like weird gamma COVID spores that mutated a lot of people, allegedly.
Specific people.
They were nicknamed miscreants because they only adjusted the physiology of bad people, right?
Sociopaths. Yeah, people with a propensity to be sociopaths. That's what these cosmic rays picked on.
Mm-hmm. So fast forward. Okay. Why do I have to talk about Octavia Spencer being in this movie?
I don't know.
She's out there producing fantastic movies with the Nelms brothers. And then she shows up in this. And I'm like, I got to reset the clock.
Who's doing favors for who in this movie? I don't know. Jason Bateman lost a bet. I don't know.
He's the second best thing in this movie. Taylor Mosby plays Tracy. That's Octavia Spencer's daughter. I just wanted to make sure we get her name out there because I thought she was
totally great. She's great.
But so Octavia Spencer's character, Emily, when she's a teenager, her parents, this all takes place in Chicago, unfortunately. I know McCarthy and Falcone I know she's at least a Chicago and he might be too.
They're both, I think he's Carbondale, she's Plainfield. Yeah. Mm.
That sounds like Mars Venus. He's Carbondale, she's Plainfield.
It's like she's a Capulet, Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. So
reference there.
Emily's parents are on the L train one night and they get killed by an attack apparently from one of these evil metahumans. It's a giant green ray that takes out the train. She ends up orphaned, living with her grandmother and vowing to dedicate her life to the sciences because that's what her parents did. And she wants to find a way to counteract these evil metahumans, these miscreants.
Mm-hmm. Good.
She's bullied in school because she's smart and she likes, knowledge and Melissa McCarthy's character, Lydia, is a slob and a dumbass. So you've got like this bad buddy comedy going on. They have a falling out. Fast forward years later, Melissa McCarthy's character is a forklift operator. A slob. It's even worse. Yeah. Emily, Octavia Spencer, is the head of like, she's like the black female Elon Musk, the head of, it's a cool company name, Stanton 4.0.
Well, it's the last, her last name.
I know, but it's, I but guess. 4.0, I just, there's something.
I don't know what happened to, you know, 0 to 3.9, but okay.
We don't talk. It's kind of like Leonard Part 6, Lord. Which we can't talk about for many reasons. We're in Chicago. It's their class reunion. I guess it's supposed to be 25 years, class of 94 or something. Emily is supposed to show up. She doesn't show up. Lydia marches over to her corporate headquarters
complex
after hours and expects her to be there. She expects to go to the desk, the front desk, and say, essentially, hi, I'm here to see Elon Musk. Can you let me up? And the security lady...
We haven't talked since high school.
Right. Babbling a lot of nonsense. And yeah, she happens to actually be there, along with a large amount of staff. Like, it could have been four in the afternoon. There's people, like, milling about. They don't look tired. They look like they're on the third shift, which I don't know that much about every corporate culture, but the corporations I've been in, they have pretty good hours. It's only the freaks who stay after hours at the actual office.
Freaks and geeks.
So the lab in which Emily is developing her super soldier serum, trademark, is left open. Lydia walks in, sits down.
Don't touch anything. Don't touch anything.
Don't touch anything. She touches everything. Mm-hmm. She's this generation's Chris Farley, and it's really sad. Like, it's so sad.
She doesn't need to be. No, it's like
she's a fantastic actress.
Can you? Was the other one? Can you ever forgive me, or can you please forgive me?
Which I didn't see, but I heard really good things about.
Please just go see that, so you can wash this out of your mind. Even Falcone has a small role in that. You can. Anyway. Okay.
So she sits in a chair. She thinks it's a space age massage chair. She ends up getting a bunch of needles in the face and being injected with this super serum. Emily walks in. She's like, what have you done? That's the super serum. We spent 5 years working on it, and you know, we can never replicate it. What kind of research is this? It's not that they are mining rare earths metals that take 5 years to develop. Usually research is like, it took us 5 years to discover the formula, but now that we have it, we can replicate it, right?
That shouldn't be the only one there. You know, they should have, you know, stored one away and okay, we'll experiment with this.
Especially,
you know, we'll experiment with this copy.
Right. And they were getting ready to test it on someone then anyway. They were like, oh, she tested a little bit too early. We were just going to do this other thing. So they were going to test it on someone, and then they would be like, well, I guess we got to wait another half decade for more. It's just so stupid.
Supposedly they were going to test it on Octavia Spencer's Lydia, right? But, and there were basically two formulas, one for strength. Emily. Two formulas, one for strength and one for invisibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course the big joke is, well, Lydia is like, what have you done to me? And Emily and her team, who's supported by Academy Award winner Melissa Leo.
I didn't recognize her at first.
Neither did I. She probably put that in her contract. She's like, I'll be in this movie, but no one can know that it's me.
I did not mistake her for Jodie Foster, though. I have to say that right now.
You know, any movie that can reference Nell as a joke, I got to give some credit to.
That's what I might give it. That's the half a star of my one star rating is you can actually go there. Wow. Okay. Nate in the wind.
So Lydia agrees to become the subject of further experiments because if she doesn't continue the injections, she's going to blow up essentially.
What, I mean, what kind of research is that? It's like we spent 5 years on this. And we're not sure, but we're thinking that, you know, if this goes unchecked and unmonitored, this subject is going to blow up. What?
Right. And especially if you're going to test that on your CEO, those are side effects you work out before you even come close to human trials. We've been talking about this movie for 10 minutes and we're not even like 5 minutes into the wretchedness. So I'll try and speed it along. There's a whole bunch of montages. She has to go through these injections for 33 days. Emily eventually starts taking invisibility pills, you know, because that's comedy. She's like, why do you get to take the pill and I got to take these injections? Meanwhile, Donald Trump is running for mayor of Chicago against a female Latina opponent. This movie, the really weird thing about the psychology of this movie is I think Falcone and McCarthy were betting on Trump getting a second term, because this is not a end of the terrible administration movie. You know, it's like this is something you put out in 2017 or just never. Because especially now that we're, you know, a couple months into the Biden administration, I'm looking back on this and being like, yeah, that really, this really feels like the jokes are 5 years old, even though it just ended.
If they want it to be authentic with, I mean, which, come on, I mean, obviously they don't, but it's Chicago. The mayoral race would have been like starting out with 16 people, and then it would have been like, you know, narrowed down to 8, and then finally down to like, you know, 3, and then 2. I mean, come on, you know.
Well, this, they're at the runoff stage, I think. Like, this is the last days of the election and everything.
And I don't think either of them are incumbent, right?
I don't know. I don't think so. They thought about that much.
But the Bobby Cannavale's name, or this Trump character, is the king.
Yes, not that's king. All we get. King is a dog's that's name. I'm the king. Yeah. And he does, you know, he trumps it up and everything, which is fine. There were moments where he got kind of scary in this movie. And I was like, I want to see him play the heavy in more movies. I just don't want to have to watch this movie. You know, he spoiler alert, guys, turn this off. If you don't want to be surprised, he turns out to be one of the cretins or metahumans or whatever they are. Miscreants.
When he sees red, look out. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, we don't even really know what his powers are. It's just when he sees red, he gets angry and he can crush a microphone.
Yeah, it's kind of like an internalized version of the Hulk, I guess. You know, he gets angry and he gets super strong, or maybe he's just super strong all the time and he holds it in. But yeah, just so many questions, as Edward Nygma would have said. They are two hero ladies decide to become the Thunder Force. They have cool outfits that, again, can't be washed, because we need a running joke about how much the outfits smell. How does that work? They can develop these outfits out of material that can't be cleaned in any capacity.
It's so bad. I mean, it's like do we ever see them take them off once they're on? I guess we do, but it's just like, that would have been even an interesting joke, is just to be like, oh, wait, we developed these suits, but they could come on, but can't get them up, you know?
There's enough questionable material around, like, body issues in this movie without getting into all of that. Like, I don't know what they're trying to do, because on one hand, it seems like they're trying to do the body positivity, beautiful at any size kind of a thing, but then they have these jokes about, like, their Batmobile is a purple Lamborghini that they can't get into or get out of. So it's like you're ridiculing them, but you're also trying to hold them up as, like, you know, these paragons of something to aspire to. I'm like, I don't get this movie.
And that stuff could have been easily remedied with, like, a kind of a meta side commentary in the screenplay. Like they, in that scene, you know, Melissa Leo's character shows the two of them, I guess, in their medical facility complex in the basement, they have all these car options. Why? I don't know. But it's like they're choosing the bright purple Lamborghini. I mean, they could have had this meta. Yeah, that looks nice, but it's not practical. I mean, look at us. So that would have been great. You know, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Instead, we have to have this awkward moment that's in the trailer where they're trying to get out of the sports car. Oh, it's so funny because, you know what? They're plus size, and oh my gosh, it's funny. It's like, how many times has Melissa McCarthy done that in a movie?
Well, this gets back to my problem. You know, it really is really driven home with super intelligence, but now it's this movie. She is essentially, like I said, this generation's Chris Farley. She's the fatty falls down. I have to throw up in every movie. I have to have some kind of, like, a horrible facial lesion or scarring or boils, you know, which we get in this movie with the injections.
Terrible diet. You know, it's like,
yeah, she's just, and she's also, you know, kind of rude and uneducated and slovenly. I mean, I guess in the last movie, she was, you know, smarter than this. But in this film, she's so dumb and gross that there's a scene where she goes out to dinner with Jason Bateman's character. I had to go back and rewind to see if I'd missed something, because for that scene, she's actually somewhat normal and kind of flirtatious and fun, but she goes right back to being this dumb slob, you know, 2 minutes later.
Any part of that, I just could not. Yes, you're right. But any part of that, I just could not take seriously, because like I said, Jason Bateman lost a bet and they slapped on crab arms with pinchers for hands, and they placed him in this movie, and he's totally disheveled, and he's in this movie, and he's really saying, you know, I'm going to make this work somehow. Mostly it doesn't work. And it's almost like, okay, that moment when they're at dinner on this dinner date, it almost seems like, okay, if we could just take this moment and all its weirdness and all its gross outness and random oddity and put that in a different movie, you know, even a short, you know, that would have been interesting. Well, you know, it's like, what is going on here? I looked at my wife. We were both on the couch. We're like, what is happening?
Oh my God, you inflicted her this on her.
Well, at some point she got up and she's like, you know, the difference between you and me is I don't have to watch this. I'm like, there's many differences, but that's one.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, to your point, this did remind me of another movie. I don't know if you've actually seen it. I recommend it because the scene that I'm going to compare it to is much better than this one, although everybody disagrees with me. Do you remember movie 43?
You know what? You know what? When I was watching that scene, I was like, you know what? I don't know why, but I haven't seen movie 43. But this movie is reminding me of that. And I'm thinking, if this is gross out interesting to me, maybe I should finally see movie 43.
I recommend it. I mean, I think it's genius on a level that few people have considered. But then again, I can say the same thing about Freddy Got Fingered. But no, I think it's the first sketch, because it's the premise of that movie is, I think it's Greg Kinnear is playing a guy trying to get a Hollywood script made. So he bursts his way into an executive's office at gunpoint and basically sits there for 2 hours telling him all of his terrible movie pitch ideas. So that's kind of the whole point, is like, he's an idiot and he's got all these great ideas for movies, but they're all terrible, but we have to sit through them. Kind of like we're being held at gunpoint. But the first one is Kate Winslet and Hugh Jackman going on a blind date. Yeah. And he's got, they're at a fancy restaurant.
Have a penis or scrotum chin or something?
Scrotum chin. That's the better version of the scene that we get in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny that I didn't see that movie, but yet I thought about it and you were also thinking about it. So maybe this movie,
psychic messages to you.
Maybe this movie did something right. And then that whole like weird dream sequence, it was like a dance thing, and wow. You know, it's like, you know, I remember Julie Haggerty and Richard Hatch, and there was a Richard Hatch, Richard Hayes, Robert Hayes, Robert Hayes.
I was going to say Richard Hatch from Survivor.
Was it Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica?
That too.
Yeah. But from Airplane, I'm like, okay, that was, wow. This is like a weird dance dream sequence, but it was just like, it got, if the rest of this movie would have been that bizarre and so like jarringly odd, okay, maybe I would have given it some kudos, but this, it just seemed like so off and out of pocket.
It did. And you know, I think the problem is they were coming up with so many, it was almost like movie 43. They had so many ideas for what they could put in a movie. They didn't think about how any of it would hang together. Like that dance sequence you mentioned happens in the middle of a convenience store heist.
Is that what it is?
I remember it correctly, yeah. Emily and Lydia go to a convenience store. It's being held up by Jason Bateman, who is the crab, because he's got these giant, you know, crab pinchers. But other than that, he's got a normal body. We don't see beneath his shirt or anything, or his pants. So they foil the bad guys, but Lydia is attracted to the crab. And that's when she has this fantasy sequence about them dancing around. And then they just let him and the rest of the people go because he oddly blackmails her about like how she like roughed up his henchmen so she could
it would look bad. You know, it's all on camera, you know.
Right. But you know what else is on camera is those people holding up that convenience store.
Yeah.
So it's just so dumb. But then they get romantically involved later and she claims that it's just to squeeze information about the king because the crab works for the king. I guess the king crab, there's a joke in there somewhere.
King crab. Yeah. Old Bay Spice.
We haven't even talked about Pom Clemente who shows up. And I think she's actually one of the highlights of the movie. I liked her in little doses, but you know, when it was all said and done, I was like, I'd rather just kind of see a movie about her. But there was too much of her in this film, if that makes any sense.
Well, you liked her in little doses because she's one dimensional, you know, and the whole thing is just, her character is just so one dimensional and she's got a great presence. You know, there's a comment of like, does she always walk this slow? You know, and
that was funny. That was the absurd stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that kind of meta commentary is like, that would have been fun. But instead we got like terrible knock, knock jokes. We got Melissa McCarthy doing a horrible Urkel impersonation. What, you know, but Pom was, excuse me, Pom was fun. It's just, again.
She was Pom wonderful. Sorry.
Wow. Does that still exist? I guess so.
That does.
But you know, again, this is just the material that they're given is just really bad. Like, you know, there happens to be like this diner that, you know, Emily used to frequent, run by, you know, great character actor Kevin Dunn. And he's like saying, oh yeah, you know, ever since the miscreants, you know, I get nobody in this place. So I'm like, wait a minute. And this is something that Falcone's screenplay doesn't address many things, but the miscreants have been around for like
25
three
years.
Decades now, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. At least. So you mean to tell me that like the city or, you know, we don't even, you know, this movie is very insular. It really only takes place in Chicago. So we don't know how the miscreants have affected the globe or any other cities.
That's but for the sequel.
Lord, or the prequel. But this, yeah, we'll have an 80s version of all this. But the we don't know what's transpired since then. So you mean to tell me this guy has had his diner this whole time and he hasn't gotten much traffic? Look. We're over a year in a pandemic. I mean, there's been diners that have closed because there's been no traffic. It's like, you mean that for three something decades, you've seen your, you know, numbers dwindle all this time and you're still, what is it? You must have great pancakes. I don't know. But the, you know, the funny thing is that once this Thunder Force duo becomes popular and becomes like the first superhero group, you know, in Chicago or ever, for that matter, they become a hit, and then I guess then he starts to get more traffic. Why? Because people feel better about going out because now there's this duo fighting miscreants.
Look, yesterday I started reading, because I haven't read it since it came out, because I think I was frankly too young to understand it. I'm getting that because reading it now, I'm like, oh, this is, I was a kid when I tried to tackle this. Now that I'm an adult, I get it. Kingdom Come by Mark Waid and Alex Ross.
Good
from
stuff.
DC.
Yeah.
That takes place in a future where the traditional Justice League superheroes have all retired and have been replaced by a new generation of punk, like not like punk rock, but punk superheroes. And they're basically fighting each other and destroying everything around them. So the Justice League has to come back. That spirit was really missing from this movie, because if I'm supposed to buy that there is this space event that affected a whole bunch of people on Earth, as you mentioned, we only focus on Chicago, but over the course of 25 years, all of these bad people have gotten powers. There should be chaos. Like Kevin Dunn is like, yeah, no one comes around here anymore. I don't see like things falling from the sky or other metahumans like punching each other outside and forcing folks inside their house. I understand this movie is worried about other things, but if you're going to set this up as your premise, you got to do some digging into it, because
I mean,
are much more interesting than what we're watching.
I mean, do you know how many people on your neighborhood block who have the propensity of being sociopaths? I mean, come on.
Well,
I mean, that would,
but even as we find out, the opening, comic book explanation, you know, with the panels mm-hmm. and, you know, everything that doesn't even make sense, because it says, you know, we're told by the narrator or whatever that it
Octavia Spencer. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, was it? I couldn't remember if there was even,
I'm pretty sure that was her narrating. Yeah.
Okay. You're probably right. I watched it at 4 o'clock this morning, so I'm a little hazy, but we're told that these things only affect sociopaths or potential sociopaths. How do we know that? Had there been studies? Had there been people captured? As we find out from Jason Bateman's character, almost by accident, because over dinner, Lydia is like, so how did you end up this way? And he's like, oh, my wife and I were on our honeymoon in Aruba, and we wandered into like a radioactive patch of crabs, and one of them bit me on the dick. And then I grew these crab things. So I guess...
Then she divorced me. I don't get it.
Right. But... The radioactive crab stuff, was that from the space rays? Because I don't think space rays are going to affect the ocean or the crab. Are there sociopathic crabs? Was he a sociopath? He apparently wasn't, but he was affected by this. So that would have been a really interesting side story. They touch on it. They're like, well, we've got to make ourselves strong so we can take care of these people. I'm like, so you're ascribing an entire generation of people who apparently only have this one trait. It's like this weird sort of racist or nationalist metaphor that they don't go into. Like, is every one of them bad? Really?
Plus this cosmic shower happened in like 83, right? Mm-hmm. So Bateman's in his 40s. He would have been a kid. Okay. So that means that whatever cosmic rays or whatever radiation, whatever, was dormant wherever he was going to be going on his honeymoon for so long. And then when he got married, went on his honeymoon in that specific location, you know, let's call it Bermuda or whatever, that something he encounters something or some radioactive crabs lay dormant. I
didn't even pick up on that. That's an interesting idea, that it could have affected someone and not manifested until later. I thought it was just like because the way they presented it is they were swimming and he got bitten by a radioactive crab, you know, kind of the Spider-Man thing. I didn't even think about the cosmic ray implications being, you know, inside of him at that point.
Yeah. I mean, even Cannavale's character, the king, it's like, okay, again, here's a guy who's in his, let's say, mid to late 40s. Again, he was probably a kid in the 80s when that shower happened. Did this affect him as a kid? You know, did he have powers as a kid? And this is what he turned out to be.
There's a really cool movie in here, maybe like a dark superhero drama about potential. You know, if this thing only affects people who are going to be sociopaths, what if you have like a little like 5-year-old kid or an 11-year-old kid who's, you know, they're a good kid and they find out they test positive for this space virus because it means that someday they're going to turn evil. It's kind of like the whole, like, if you could travel back in time and kill Hitler as a baby, like, would you do it? It's like, he's a baby. maybe I'd take him out as a man if I could do some Winter Soldier shit, but you know, he's a baby.
Right.
But again, these are great ideas for stories that don't belong anywhere near this movie.
Yeah. I don't get it. Like I said, there was, I really appreciated the actors who were portraying the younger versions. I thought that there was something really interesting and endearing with their performances. And like we've established, I think the young actress who plays Emily's daughter was really good. Of course, you know, she's also a brainiac, but, you know, and there's this other thing too, that once Lydia comes back in Emily's life, there's unexplored things going on there. There's really no, they spend too much time with like 33 different montages of her training and her learning her powers and, oh, out of shape person, you know, learning how to get in shape. This is funny.
Well, that's the other thing, is they never really get in shape. Like all that training.
No. You know, they stay in a shape. But you know, There's unexplored opportunities there to like talk about like them even having at least one heart to heart, these two adults, of like, you know, I'm hurt by the fact that you never reached out to me in these 3 decades or whatever. I'm really happy for you, but I really missed you or something, you know, instead of all these like sarcastic quips and, you know, ignoring things and looking over things. And then there's also the fact that Emily cannot connect with her daughter, can only connect with her daughter in this whole Brainiac fashion. You know, there's the scientist geek stuff that, you know, they get nerdy over, they can connect with because it's in their genes. As far as the fun, having fun and the fun aspect of life, that's where Lydia comes in, and she connects with her daughter, Emily's daughter, in a way that Emily can't. That's interesting, yet it's just totally either you know, minutely explored for laughs, you know, don't, you forgot to turn your screen off, you're saying things that's really rude and obnoxious. Turn your screen off, you know. But it could have been like, hey, you know, I know that I've been gone in your life, and I didn't even know about your daughter, and I feel bad. Instead, she's like, why didn't you tell me about your daughter? It's like, look, you could have reached out to her in all these years too, to find a catch up on her life. You know, it's like, yeah, at least this movie reminded me that, like, you know, the whole man-child genre of stupid comedy that, you know, Adam Sandler has mined to death, at least, you know, you mentioned McCarthy is pretty much the Chris Farley. I mean, she's also pretty much the, you know, woman child of, you know, the comedy genre too. And she's like become almost like the female version of Adam Sandler, you know, in his regurgitated comedies that just seem so interchangeable. It's unfortunate.
It's a weird standard that I'm still trying to work out. And I've been trying to figure out what my problem is for years. One of many problems. I think it's that I hold women in a higher regard when it comes to the movies. Like, it's sort of, I understand the idea that, you know, well, women can make gross out comedies too. I'm like, is that really your goal? Sure. Like, because the societal narrative is strong, empowered, you know, woman. I understand that. They should also be empowered to make really crappy movies in which they degrade and demean themselves. And that is their right to do it. But when I'm watching it, I'm like, everybody in this movie is better than this. I think if maybe if the material were smarter or grosser or pushed some boundaries, like movies like The Hangover and that kind of stuff did, it would work. But there's something about Falcone and McCarthy's partnerships. It just seems kind of half measured. They're just poking and saying, isn't this edgy? Isn't this, you know, funny? We're not supposed to be doing this. I'm like, yeah, I saw this 20 years ago.
Done better. I'm wondering as I was watching this. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm wondering when I was watching this that I'm like, how, if both of these, you know, talented actors were involved, Falcone and McCarthy, if they were involved in another movie, would it be different if either it wasn't Falcone's script, or like maybe he was just directing, or maybe he was just writing? Now, obviously, something like this, the writing is the problem. Yeah. First and foremost, the writing is the foundation of a bad movie. You know? But, you know, what if, you know, he directed it, but it was somebody else's script? You know, I don't know if we've seen that yet. I don't know. It's like,
I mean, he's fine as a director. It would be interesting to see. Yeah, there was nothing that I could point to and say that was poorly directed. It's fine. It's all fine. The problem is in the screenplay. You know, I also, this is just a pet peeve, but, and I feel weird even saying this, but there's a lot of, they seemed very concerned about appearing to be woke and like uber progressive and ticking off a whole bunch of boxes rather than concentrating on doing anything meaningful with their characters. You know, there's a scene on the street where something happens and there's a little girl standing between two guys. Look, and she says, "Dads, look, it's a superhero." I'm like, okay, yeah, we've got the two gay dads and the little girl. We've got, you know, Emily as the little girl. She's all about like being into science, I don't even think she's a good character because she's so one note. She's like, I have to get into science because I have to please my parents. Every time anything comes up in any conversation, she's like, I'm doing this for my parents. I love
She's single-minded science. At least.
Right. But it's just, again, it seems like this, you know, continuation of this STEM propaganda. We have to get girls into the sciences. This is all fine.
Yeah.
But there's so much box ticking and like, hey, we're on the right side of every single issue in this movie that I'm like, just tell me a really solid superhero story and let me fill in the gaps for myself.
Well, yeah, on that note, I was surprised at how seemingly sidelined almost to the point where she's an afterthought that Spencer's character is.
Literally is invisible.
Wow. Well, the thing is that she's kind of not, you know, yet she is, you know, her power is invisibility, but there's this weird thing that Falcone does that I think that's a problem with his directing right here is that, okay, you have a character who's invisible, yet for some reason, and it maybe it's contractual obligation, I don't know, we still have to see her, but kind of not see her. It's almost like this forced ghost that she's hanging out. Who is that for? The viewer? I mean, because obviously so. It's not for anybody, because she can't be seen by Lydia or anybody else, but only the audience who are watching the movie can see this as this force ghost. I'm like, this is just weird.
It is, and I wonder how much of that. Was, which, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say the other thing is that's her ability. I'm not gonna say it's her power. She is not powerful. That's her ability. She has this thing where if she gets into an altercation, she uses a taser. Yet if she uses a taser to a certain frequency, she loses her invisibility.
Yeah.
What is going on there? What's that about? I mean, you're not even, they don't even do anything with her invisibility.
Well, they do one thing and it sort of relates back to the taser, and I had to do some like mental math. Hi there. Hi. Yeah, saying hi to our
he
friend.
Wanted to sit on my lap.
How long has he been sitting there? I just noticed.
Yeah, I just picked him up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But in the climax, when they're going up against Pom Clemente's character, who, you know, does the Mortal Kombat thing where she can summon lightning and orbs and stuff, she busts through a door, knocking McCarthy and Spencer over into this dock. And in that moment, you can tell that the charge disrupts Emily's invisibility because she is, you know, visible for a couple of minutes. She eventually, I guess, the effect wears off and she turns invisible. But I was like, oh, okay, they're at least being consistent where it's not just the taser, but it's any, like, if she's in the proximity of any high kind of thing. Electricity blast, then it can mess up her rhythms. They didn't do anything with it really as far as the story goes, but I was like, it's consistent. It's a nice idea I'd like to see explored in a better movie. But as far as Octavia Spencer goes, I just have a feeling that maybe not, but it would just be bad optics to have these two lead actresses, or, you know, it could be actors or whatever, in a film, but you give one of them the majority of the screen time because the other one's power is invisibility. It's like, they're both fighting crime, but, oh, Octavia Spencer's just not here. We're going to just throw, park benches to the air.
She's smarter and she's using it. She has invisibility. They're not doing anything with that.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything with really either of those, you know? And it's like, what? It's funny. At some point, I paused the movie, turned to my wife, and I think it was around the time where it was like early in the montage scenes. And I'm like, you know what? This would have been a really interesting movie if these actors would have been cast in the opposite roles. So you had McCarthy as this super straight, smart, you know, person, you know, who's single-mindedly in her, you know, pursuit of education. And Spencer is the dumb, you know, village idiot, as they call her in the movie. That would have been totally different and interesting.
I wonder if that would have cut too close to McCarthy's character from Ghostbusters 2016. Because I don't remember much about her. I just remember she was a scientist and she was, I think, more put together. She at least had glasses. But no, I would love to see Octavia Spencer play the Melissa McCarthy role, because at least it would be something different. I can almost not imagine her doing that type of thing.
Right. And you could see why she may have wanted to take the role, because it would have been such a diversion and something different. I mean, she's done that before with like Ma, you know.
I didn't see that.
I still haven't gotten the courage to see that just because it looks so disturbing. But I mean, I've seen other disturbing things. I don't know why that was, you know. But anyway, it would have been just so different. But there's the goal. The goal of this movie is not to be unique or different. It's just to be more the same. Better yet, I turned to my wife again during this movie, and I'm like, towards the end, I was like, okay, who is this movie for? Who is this aimed for?
Yeah.
Who is this aimed for? What comedy is there in this movie? And who's going to find this funny? I don't get it.
here's, you know, I'm gonna, this movie aroused a lot of thoughts in me. And when I say aroused, I don't mean like I was watching the movie with my pants on, just to be clear.
Okay.
There's a trope in comedy that women aren't funny. And there are movies like this. I'm not a fan of Bridesmaids. I know everybody loved that movie, but that was the kind of the thing that planted the seed in my head of, yeah, they can make an all-female version of The Hangover, but they just, and even in the Hangover movies, I laugh at them because those characters are so undignified. There's just something about seeing a dude bro frat guy puke his guts out or kind of get his comeuppance that just doesn't feel right when it comes to women, I guess, because I just consider them to be generally more well put together.
Beyond that, you know?
Right. So watching these movies and this movie in particular, I feel like it's not going to appeal to comic book fans because they tend to be a lot more well-read and smarter than the material that they're given. It's not going to necessarily appeal to, people who want to watch a strong female-centric comedy. Cause I could just see, people on a date, like a girl saying, "Hey, look, there's a new Melissa McCarthy movie." And then she sits down and watches it with her boyfriend. It's like, "These people aren't funny. This sucks." And he's like, "Oh, you don't like a female fronted comedy?" And he's like, "No, this is just not funny." It's doing more to denigrate like female led comedies than anything else. I look at like Trainwreck with Amy Schumer, I think was the perfect balance of a movie that had brains and heart and a little bit of a gross out factor. Mm-hmm. But this is just nothing.
It is just nothing. Again, we haven't answered our question of who is this for. I don't know. I think that, is this what the streaming services want you to expect each week for new features? This movie would not do well at all in theaters.
No.
Superintelligence.
Falcone and McCarthy dodged a huge bullet with COVID because I think they would have been looking at spectacular flops.
Oh yeah, and I'm hoping that their part in the next Thor movie is very small. I'm pretty sure it has to do with another Asgardian recreation with Matt Damon as Loki and everything. They're doing that again. I think McCarthy's playing Blanchett's character from the past, the previous movie, where they're reenacting events. Who knows what Falcone's going to do? But
contractually, Melissa McCarthy, what's going to happen is she's going to throw up all over Matt Damon.
That'd be great. That'd be great. I think my beyond the drama that she did, did she get a nomination for that, or was it?
I think the Chicago critics, she was on the ballot and she got some consideration from us.
Yeah.
But
can you ever forgive me? Yeah. Besides that, I mean, I liked her in Spy. I mean, I thought that was fun with, Jason Statham and,
I never finished it. Feel compelled to do so.
There is a little bit of more of the same in that, but I think it just seems like more people were, more of the actors and the characters were game for what that was. I mean, Rose Byrne, Jason Statham, all the people around her were like, "Yeah, let's do this. Let's turn it up a notch." But like, there's in this movie, there's just so many oddball moments, or just flat out dull and unfunny. I checked out.
It's really bad when you see a joke begin and you realize that there is a punchline or at least a point, but you have to wait 3 minutes of like ad-libbing and improvising to get there, and the punchline wasn't even funny in your mind.
I mean, I think like, say, somebody like Mike Myers, especially in the Austin Powers movies, he was really good at taking a joke and kind of like stretching it out, and yet it was still kind of funny. It was like, "Oh boy, we're actually just still on this joke, but it is actually kind of funny." Even like physical stuff, like that scene in Austin Powers where he's in the little golf cart in the lair and he's in that small corridor and he's trying to back up, and they take forever with that. I like those moments. Here, there's that whole Urkel bit, and there's so many other, like the knock knock joke part where they prolong it, and it's just like, this is like, it's like watching, being subjected to a friend trying to be funny, and you're just trying to endure it because he or she's your friend and you just like you want it to be over with because it's really not that funny, and you're like, yeah, okay.
You don't. I'm sitting right here, David.
Sorry.
No, I'm
totally here every week.
You are. I get what you're saying, and you're totally spot on. It hurts so much because part of the problem is during that Urkel bit, because the gag is she has to act out who's, you know, Urkel is because nobody
gets it.
I'm like, Urkel is like a pop culture icon. I know we're older, so he was like around when we were younger and more prevalent, but I feel like there would at least be some recognition.
I mean, it's like Alf or Punky Brewster. It's like, you know, we're way beyond that, and nobody really gets that unless they really get pop culture. You know, it's like nobody in that room would have really gotten it. And if so, they would have been like, what? Why are you, huh? And it just seemed like, okay, you're just going to make fun of somebody else that you don't know in the room. Even when you right there and then find out that this is your estranged best friend's daughter and you're still making fun of her. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, I mean, that's not cool. It's like pseudo bullying, you know, like what?
There's
no tact at all.
Yeah, I mean, she is totally a pseudo bully, you know, and it's like, which is odd because she became friends with you know, Lydia when, or no, she became friends, getting these mixed up. She became friends with Emily when she was getting bullied in class.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you grew up and became a bully. So great. But yeah, it's a weird thing. There's this whole weird banter too with the king and his goons, his minions, that is also very unfunny and prolonged. It's like he can never remember like who's left, you know, as far as who he hasn't killed or what their names are. And there's this whole thing about, oh, call me Andrew or Drew or what. It's like, shut up.
Yeah. But yeah, getting back to, there has to be someone who's going to sit there and watch this movie and just be rolling on the floor. I don't know who that person is. They're probably going to leave some comments on this video to let me know exactly who they are.
You know, that I already told somebody else this week, there's an audience for everything. There really is. And sometimes we're baffled by that. But there is an audience for every movie.
Well, I will say it's a weird kind of a telling sign. I opened up IMDb to bring up the cast list for this movie, as mm-hmm. I usually do. And there's a big front page banner for Thunder Force.
Sure.
When I went on Netflix this morning, you got a screener access to this a bit early.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't, you know, critics perks.
You didn't ask for it. You were smart.
Well,
I'm not going to pull that trigger.
Well, no, I mean, I knew the timing of it. So I'm like, we're going to talk about this on Friday afternoon. I can get up and watch it Friday morning. So I'm not going to go through the hassle. I went to Netflix this morning and there was this moment of dread again, because it's 4 o'clock. And then, you know,
where is it?
Right. Because it's not even like on front page Netflix, like brand new. I had to type in the search bar, Thunder Force. And
you know, that's not unusual for Netflix. That is really, it's weird, but it's not unusual for Netflix. I don't know why they don't do that. I don't know why their new releases that drop on Fridays typically. Why aren't they front and center? Why aren't they so obvious when you pull up Netflix?
Well, that's the first time I've seen that though. Like usually there's like the different ribbons and there'll be one saying like premiering or brand new. And I saw that ribbon this morning and they had some new things on there, but Thunder Force, maybe I need to scroll over like 9 times to find it, but it just seemed like and I think on IMDb right now, it's at a 3.4 rating. So maybe they've wised up and they're like, yeah, we know what this is.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that I was so lengthy in my review. I mean, that's pretty much my MO, being verbose and all, but I was just like, really, I had this much to say? And it was more like catharsis, getting it all out there. And I'm like, hopefully I won't ever have to write about this, and hopefully after this conversation I won't ever have to talk about it. But yeah, it's just, gosh, come on now.
Well, I haven't read it because you posted just a little bit before this conversation.
Right, right.
I will link to it in the video description. So yeah, if you want to check out more of David's thoughts, please do so. I'm happy to not talk about this movie again, unless, of course, a couple of years from now, McCarthy and Falcone, you know, assuming that they still have some cachet and people give them money to put together these, you know, they're elaborate, they're expensive movies with special effects and name actors and stuff. I just feel like at some point they're going to get Shyamalan'd. Someone's going to be like, no, you've had a couple of too many stinkers here, but maybe they'll come out with something that's going to be truly great. And it'll not make us reevaluate this movie, but just talk about it in the sense of like, man, that was so much better than Thunder Force or Super Intelligence. They've learned their lessons.
Hopefully, you know, pseudo great, hopefully different, you know, because if you watched all of these Falcone McCarthy joints, this is the fifth movie they've done together where he wrote and directed it. They've been in other movies together, but like Tammy with the Boss, Life of the Party. I mean,
I may have seen all of those, but I don't remember any of them.
That's the thing. It's like, because they're all just blend in together and they're like interchangeable.
They're 90 minute posters.
The only one that stands out is probably Super Intelligence, because it was at least trying to do something a little bit different. It was trying to do a little bit more of a serious romance comedy with a sci-fi bent. Okay. But other than that, it was just the same slobby, gross out characters, obnoxious. You know, I'm sure there was some vomit and gags and fart jokes, but yeah. But man, I think if anything, this movie, by the end of the year, you will still remember seeing Jason Bateman with crab arms and pinchers.
You know, I did like,
especially when he gets them cut off like that. It's like, what the heck?
Well, the other thing is, I know nothing about crab physiology, but it seems to me that if someone lopped off both of my arms in one fell swoop, regardless of if they're crab or human, I would have some kind of reaction instead of just like, oh, that sucks.
Oh, geez.
Like he wasn't screaming or anything. Like, do crabs not have nerves in their claws? Maybe they don't.
I mean, he could have been screaming and be like, ah, this sucks. You know.
I did like that his method of retreating is doing the little crab dance as he shakes himself off the stage. That was cute.
I mean, Jason Bateman is like, is this his breather from like the heaviness of Ozark? I'm like, I would search YouTube just to see if he did any interviews for this movie. Like, what was it like to, when you first put on these crab arms, did it help you really get into character then?
Ozarks was a Netflix series, right?
Yeah, it's really good.
I've heard. I wonder if this is some kind of talking about contractual obligations.
I don't know.
You do this series and then you got to do two movies and then you're done.
Yeah, because it's really interesting. It is part of Falcone and McCarthy's production company. So I'm wondering if they approached Netflix or Netflix approached them, because, you know, with a lot of these movies that are coming out during COVID, they were once attached to a studio, Paramount or whatever, and now they are dropped on a streaming platform. But lately we've been seeing just like straight up Netflix movies where they've, you know, approached a certain production company, or certain production companies approached Netflix, I imagine. This is just straight up that. It was never really attached to any other studio, I don't think.
Well, I know that, because I know they were filming this before the pandemic, because I remember back when I had my job and I worked in the merchandise mart, there was a big hullabaloo because for a couple of days they were shooting. It was weird because there were daytime shots, I think, or maybe they're just setting up for the nighttime shots, because there are like shots outside the merchandise mart on the river, particularly towards the end of this movie.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. That'll be, of all the books to be written about this era in 20 years, I'll be first in line to read the one about the effect on the movies, because I think that's going to be, there's a whole history there to be written.
For sure. For sure. Yeah.
Well, speaking of history, I'm ready to put this one behind us. Yeah. Thank you very much for talking about Thunder Force.
There are other Super Soldier Serum viewing out there for people to watch that are much better than this.
Much, much better. By the time you watch this, there'll be another video that you can watch with David and I and other critics talking about Falcon and Winter Soldier on Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah, that's the one.
The latest episode of which I think was one of the strongest. Man.
And the heaviest.
Yes, in terms of like sheer, you know, vibranium.
Yeah, and that's a teaser. Yes. Right there.
Well, no, it's not a teaser, because The episode will have aired already. I'm getting all twisted up. I feel like I'm
talking about time twisty.
Yeah, yikes. Well, anyway, I'm going to let you go.
All right.
Folks, Thunder Force is now streaming on Thunder. Netflix, so you can be aware of what to avoid. Thanks, David. Keeping it real is David Fowley. We'll talk soon.
Bingo.
All right, man. Take it easy. I'll see you in a couple hours.
See ya. Bye.
Right, bye.